Hari Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahavirayam Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastu Mavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Page 30. People are very much anxious to live in peace and prosperity in this material world. And here in Bhagavad Gita, the peace formula is given personally by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Everyone should understand that Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the ultimate proprietor of all planets, and therefore the enjoyer of all activities, political, social, cultural, religious, economic, and so on. The Lord has given perfect advice in Bhagavad Gita, and Ambarish Maharaj, as the ideal executive head, ruled the entire world as a Vaishnava, taking advice from Vaishnava Brahmins. The Shastras enjoin that even though a Brahmana may be well versed in the occupational Brahminical duties, and may be learned in Vedic knowledge, he cannot give advice as guru until he is a Vaishnava. Right, because then he actually understands what's the purpose of the Vedic literatures. Right? Otherwise, the Vedic literature is there, and then we look at it from our own perspective of karma and jnana, but that's not what it's for. Right? It's not for that. It's for devotional service. So therefore, it means if you don't have anyone who's Vaishnava, then a Brahmin who knows it has his knowledge is good. But if you're going to go more ideal, then for a Vaishnava, for having a Brahmin who's a Vaishnava, then that's actually what you're looking for. Right? So, therefore, as indicated here by the words tan nishta, vipra, bihita, Maharaj Ambarish took advice from Brahmanas who are pure devotees of the Lord. For ordinary Brahmins, who are merely learned scholars or experts in performing ritualistic ceremonies, are not competent to give advice, because their advice may mechanically work well, but the problem is it won't actually attend to the upliftment of the king or his citizens, which is the actual purpose of the whole system, the whole Varnashram system. So if you're following all the Vedic rules and not elevating yourselves to Krishna consciousness, then one's kind of missed the point. So Brahmins, other than pure Vaishnavas, they won't be able to give that proper understanding. Right? So, makes sense, yeah. So, therefore, he says, since all these things, political, social, cultural, religious, economic, and so on, all these positions are for the Lord's enjoyment, therefore, the Brahmins who are pure devotees, they can give that advice. That's how you lead government. Right? So that makes sense. It has to be governed by that understanding. If it's not, then it won't be complete. Like we'll say, no, but the skills are going on, but that's not enough. The skills going on, nice. But it has to be that these skills are being applied in pure devotion. That's a value. Yes.
Well, previously mentioned that he had no problems in ruling his kingdom.
Yes.
It's a matter of perception. He didn't perceive any problems, but the material world is always full of problems.
But it'll be minimal. I mean, still, birth, you know, people are born, people are going to die. Even if you remove everything, that it's never too hot or too cold, there's always enough, there's enough facility. But the point is you're going to have two problems. One is that the temporariness of the material world, and so then even if everything is going as good as it can due to piety, so there's no, as you can say, external obstacles, it will be temporary because the body will end and everything else ends. And then the other problem is going to be that the happiness you're looking for from that perfectly running situation won't actually satisfy the soul. Right? So that the how you say it, eternality and the happiness, these two. That's why it says the material world is a place, is temporary and a place of misery. Right? So it can't satisfy. It's nice, but it doesn't actually address the soul. And the body, being dead matter, actually technically is not too worried about it. You know? So the difficulty comes down to, then we're just left with our false identity with the body. So when nice things happen with the body, then we'll say it's good. And we'll say we're happy. But in actuality, the soul is not happy. So when you have everything, then you may... What are you going to think about? Right? In material life, one's thinking about how to become happy. Right? So that's the whole thing. But now all that's being maintained nicely by the performance of your duties. All the results are coming. So as good as it gets. So that would, by definition, say you're happy. Now what are you going to think about?
Krishna.
Yes, so that's the whole point. You have to think about Krishna. Otherwise, if you think about the material, it will feel empty. Right?
But it would be kind of good if everything works nicely and you can think of Krishna.
Yes, but you still have to think of Krishna. Because otherwise there was that, I'm not sure when it was, but in the last century, early last century, that there was a king who died of boredom. It's an actual medical condition. I don't know. It's got a name, some fancy Latin name. That nothing impresses him, so he died of boredom. So that's the point. He didn't go across to Krishna consciousness. So it's not that automatically one creates it, because then we're saying karma generates bhakti. It means bhakti comes from bhakti. So if you've had association with the pure Vaishnavas, then that will give rise to our being interested in that. And therefore, in other words, for the demons, they run into obstacles, they make a new plan. We run into obstacles, we think of Krishna.
And make a new plan,
yes. So, of course, you know, we don't want it to, you know, we don't want to be, how you say?
We don't want to fully surrender.
Yes, like, you know. So the point is, but like Ambarish Maharaj, he'll be making a plan how to make things nice for Krishna. So if it didn't work out that way, he'll try in a different way. But the demons are working out how I will be happier. And so it never quite works out. In modern times, there are legislative assemblies whose members are authorized to make laws for the welfare of the state. But according to this description of the kingdom of Maharaj Ambarisha, the country of the world should be ruled by a chief executive whose advisors are all devotee brahmanas. Such advisors or members of the legislative assembly should not be professional politicians, nor should they be selected by the ignorant public. Rather, they should be appointed by the king. When the king, the executive head of state, is a devotee and he follows the instructions of devotee Brahmins in ruling the country, everyone will be peaceful and prosperous. So he's appointing them, but at the same time as he's following what they say. So you could say, oh, but he'd appoint those that they'll do what he wants, but he's controlling them, they control him. So therefore he looks at who has the qualification and the character, and then brings them and then follows their advice. So that's the thing, the Vedic always has, the balance is always there. The modern, you have to actually put it in. You know? Does that make sense? You always have to try to create this checks and balances like that. But the point is it's not about prosperity or positive. The positive is, no, this is what the scripture said, here are people who know it and they give how to follow it. That's the positive.
This, in the council of ministers, like one who said the Rajaguru, he also falls in this category, or
he's above this, because he checks on what they're doing, because he advises them. Okay. Right? So in other words, the senior most, he's advising them. But they're the ones that actually run the place, right? So he's an advisor, you could say, to the king, right? Personal advisor. These others then advise on the matter of how to run the state. But he'll be advising, he'll give advice on that if it's needed, but more he'll be looking at the character of the king. So So the Rajguru is the one who sees after that aspect. Because the other ministers, they may say, according to this quality or that, we should do like this. So it's included, but it's not about the king developing those qualities himself. It's about how to run the kingdom with those qualities. So the Rajguru, he deals with how to develop those qualities in the king. Does that make sense? So there's a slight difference. And he makes a check on everything so he can tell if it is going nicely. And if it, you know, and if it is, then nothing to say. And if it's not, he'll point out some weaknesses. But he's not going to control that or correct it. The king and his ministers, they'll take care of it. Like if he finds, okay, in this district, the bureaucrats are harassing the people, then he'll point out, as the protector of the people, you can't allow this to happen. Then the king will go with the, and then with his ministers, they'll work out how to adjust that and correct the situation. But it's not that he's telling him what to do, he's telling him what's the proper thing to do. You know, what's the proper perspective, the proper understanding. And the Brahmins, they're also doing that on things. If something needs to be done, they'll give the advice. What's the proper way, what the Shastras say. So it's a balance of all these things. Right? But it's about the positive thing of elevation in God consciousness and following the laws of God. So you're following God's laws and trying to be God conscious. So the two go together, right? The environment in which you function is controlled by God's laws, and within that environment, you're trying to positively be God conscious, right? So it's a very effective system. Right? So that makes sense. No one else has a system like that. Modern, it could say, oh, they have this and they have that as checks and balances, but where's God come into it, right? Okay, now you know the house. You know, controls the executive, and then the judiciary controls those two, and then they control this. But the whole point is where does God come into it? Where does development of character come into it? Right? So it's got to be that the leader already has that character, and as long as he doesn't do anything too wrong, then it doesn't end up in some kind of weirdo scene. Right? But if not, then he gets impeached, and then they bring another one. But who in that whole assembly of Brahmins was training so that that higher character would be there? No one. So the judiciary's not, the cabinet's not, and the house is not. Does that make sense? When the king, the executive head of the state, is a devotee and follows the instructions of devotee brahmanas in ruling the country, everyone will be peaceful and prosperous. When the king and his advisors are perfect devotees, nothing can be wrong in the state. All the citizens should become devotees of the Lord, and then their good character will automatically follow. Right? So it's a matter of the Krishna consciousness is what's being pushed, and not breaking laws. But it's about the Krishna conscious, then all the other things will follow. That's what it says. And then their good character will automatically follow. One who has unflinching devotion for the personality of Godhead has all the good qualities of the demigods, but one who is not a devotee of the Lord has only material qualifications that are of little value. Right? So that's our position. Having material qualifications is not of great value. Having devotion to the Lord, now that's special. This is because he is hovering on the mental plane and is certain to be attracted by the glaring material energy. Srimad Bhagavatam 5:18-12. Citizens under the guidance of a Krishna conscious king will become devotees, and then there will be no need to enact new laws every day to reform the way of life in the state. Right? The Vedic, what Manu gives, those are the laws to run the state, and they've been around since it was spoken by Brahma and Bhrigu, you know, in the assembly of sages, probably in the first kalpa, right? And we're quite a few kalpa. We're 51 years down the line. So 51 times 360, that's how many kalpas were down the line. So it hasn't been had to be changed since. It's perfect. So you don't have to make newer and newer laws. That's the whole idea. So then you can work, do other things rather than that. If citizens are trained to become devotees, they will automatically become peaceful and honest. And if they are guided by a devotee king, advised by devotees, the state will not be in the material world, but in the spiritual world. All the states of the world should therefore follow the ideal rule of the administration of Maharaj Ambarish, as described here. So, the materialist, the difficulty is be hovering on the mental plane. Then he actually doesn't know what to pick, because his choice will be what will get benefit for himself, or the extended self, on the platform of karma and jnana, not on the platform of bhakti. So therefore, you can never satisfy the living entity on that platform, and when you try, it just gets worse. It's like the tar baby, right? You harass the tar baby, then, you know, your hand gets stuck. And then trying to pull out your hand, you put your other hand there. Now you have two hands stuck. Now to try to get, you know, how you say, leverage so you can get your hands out, you have to put your foot and then the other foot. And now you're totally stuck. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's why it doesn't work. So it's only if it's done by Krishna consciousness, that then there can be satisfaction. Because when there's satisfaction, then material prosperity and all these can actually be in place and things will work nicely. But if we're just working on the material platform of just, these things of availability and supply and demand and these kind of things, then the difficulty comes up is that people always want more. They're never satisfied. Therefore, since there's, in their eyes, limited facility, that means if everybody wants it, then it's a fight. When the Vedic, if you're satisfied, everybody can have what they require. You can say, no, but I want more, but that's not what you require. That's why it's a problem, because what you want is what is somebody else's requirement. And so therefore it's a problem. Oh. Right. Just like, what do you call it? The modern things, it means organic's been around for a while, and now one of the more newer ones is free trade, right? So then,
Fair trade.
Free trade's been around a while, like that. That's why the controllers and enjoyers, they want free trade, and the friends of everyone want to control that. So, fair trade. So the point is in the Vedic system, everybody's getting their quota. So it's naturally going to be fair. You don't have to have separate regulations to control that. So we think, well, we're very sophisticated. We have fair trade. But the point is, because you're unsophisticated, that's why you have to have rules. Right? So it's honesty among thieves. That's what you're dealing with. It's not actual progressive society. It's just how thieves, don't bother each other so much. That's... Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments on the same verse. Always offering his devotional actions with Rati, using his mind and senses to the Supreme Lord Krishna, whose worship is superior to jnana and austerity. He ruled the world taught by devotee brahmanas who said, worship the Lord 24 hours a day with all your senses and mind and assign the task of ruling the world to competent representatives. So he's being a Mahajan, Kulashekar, he was actually setting the standard. He's the exception, he's actually how it should be done.
I raise a question because the ministers of Kulashekar happen to plot against the Vaishnavas, that the king should not go crazy. That's what I'm understanding now. And finally, he just gave up everything, Kulashekar, and even put on the mat.
Okay. But the point was, is he was always absorbed in Krishna consciousness, so the other ministers, they running things, then they become materialistic and want to control everything. So their lack of Krishna consciousness and results in him going not as a retinue, but just himself. Because he wanted to go with all the minister and the army and everything and go to, just move the kingdom over there.
Okay. He didn't explain himself properly, otherwise they would have agreed.
The thing is you're dealing with, what are they called? Nambudris. Those are Keralite Brahmanas. So they're Bengalis without Lord Chaitanya. Yes, that's the problem. Yeah. Okay. So the competent representative, because they're going to take care of everything. He's just going to see that the decisions are made properly in that, but the king doesn't carry out the activities, he authorizes the activities. So that's why then he's and assigned the task of ruling the world to competent representatives. So they take care of the things. They take care of the main things according to that, under these great Brahmanas. So then it's not a problem. Shri Sukadev Goswami continued, in desert countries where there flowed the river Saraswati, Marjan Barish performed great sacrifices like the Ashwamedha Yajna and thus satisfied the master of all yajnas, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, right? So lazy intelligence. Right? That's the technique. Such sacrifices were performed with great opulence and suitable paraphernalia and with contributions of dakshina to the brahmanas, who were supervised by great personalities like Vasishta, Asita, and Gotama, representing the king, the performer of the sacrifices. Right, so there already you see the principle in the sacrifice. The king's doing the sacrifice, but technically he doesn't do anything. All the Brahmins are doing everything. Right, in the sacrifice. So in the same way as within the kingdom, it's about him that he's doing it, but at the same time as he's not, he competent persons are carrying everything out.
So that means the ideal king is only bothering about being Krishna conscious and appointing the right kind of people.
Right kind of people and seeing that it's going in the right direction, that the things are being done in the right way.
So ideally he's not too hands-on.
How much is necessary. The point is, it's not that he's not or it's not that he is, it's what's necessary. The point is, if you have people to do things, why would you do it? Right, because the more layers of competence that are there, the better it runs. Rather than, if I don't do everything, nothing will run properly. I don't want anybody else to do it because otherwise, I have nothing to do. Like that. So we always have to see is that there's always that balance, because otherwise the modern it's always based on an ism. You know what I'm saying? It'll always be, there's an authority issue, so we don't want him doing too much. But it's a matter of, no, there is authority, and then everything's done in its proper balance. So, Srila Prabhupada comments, when one performs ritualistic sacrifices as prescribed in the Vedas, one needs expert brahmanas known as yajnika brahmanas. In Kali Yuga, however, there is a scarcity of such brahmanas. Therefore, in Kali Yuga, the sacrifice recommended in Shastra is Sankirtana Yajna. Yajai Sankirtana Prayer Yajanti Hi Sumeda Saha, Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.32. Instead of spending money unnecessarily on performing yajnas, impossible to perform in this age of Kali, because of the scarcity of yajnika brahmanas, one who is intelligent performs Sankirtan Yajna. Without properly performed yajnas to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there will be scarcity of rain. Yajyad Bhavati Parjanya. Bhagavad Gita 3.14. Therefore, the performance of yajna is essential. Without yajna, there will be a scarcity of rain. And because of this scarcity, no food grains will be produced, and there will be famines. It is the duty of the king, therefore, to perform different kinds of yajnas, such as the Ashwamedha yajna, to maintain the production of food grains. Anad bhavati bhutani. Without food grains, both men and animals will starve. Therefore, yajna is necessary for the state to perform. Because by yajna the people in general will be fed sumptuously. The brahmanas and yajnika priests should be sufficiently paid for their expert at service. This payment is called dakshina. Right? Means the Brahman himself, he applies the thing that he's just performing his duties, and whatever comes by Krishna's grace is what he'll get. The Yajaman, he shouldn't be thinking like that. Oh, their Brahman is so, and they're so, I don't have to give them much, or if I give them too much, then they'll be, you know, it'll overwhelm, they'll become materialistic, so I want to save them from materialism because I'm such a great, fabulous person, so I will give them a very small dakshin just so that they can maintain Krishna consciousness. Aren't I fabulous? Right? So that's we have to understand is, here is from the side of the Yajaman, they give very nice donations. From the side of the Brahmanas, they're satisfied with whatever they get. That combination is good. Always the problem is when you reverse the mentalities, then, you should give so much. Oh, but you should be satisfied with so little. You know, then you're dealing with materialism here. This is not understanding of the Shastra. Right? Does that make sense? Because each one is trying to get, one wants to get more, one wants to give less. Mm-hmm. So it's a lack of knowledge. Ambarish Maharaj, as head of the state, performed all these yajnas through great personalities like Vashishta, Gotama, and Asita. Right? So even though he's head of state, he doesn't control these things. That there should be a yajna that he does, but then the Brahmins take care of running it. Right? Not that, oh, I'm the manager, I gotta manage everything and make decisions on everything. Well, I don't think, you know, in the Abhishek we should do it like this. I think we should let it. No, that's not his business. The Brahmins know what to do, they run it. As soon as then you try like this, then that's the time when you're inviting Parasaram to make a new tour. Right? Because that was the problem. As soon as we think administration or management is the top of everything, that's when we've made a serious mistake. We have to understand devotional service is the top of everything. And then devotional service is managed to make it go well. But in no way is management ever the cause of bhakti. That's for karmis. They may think that. Pure devotees never think like that. Personally, however, he was engaged in devotional service, as mentioned before. Savai mana Krishna padara vindayo. Srimad Bhagavatam 9.4.18. The king or head of state must see that things go on well under proper guidance, and he must be an ideal devotee, as exemplified by Maharaj Ambarish. It is the duty of the king to see that food grains are produced, even in desert countries, what to speak of elsewhere. Right? Because there's a desert because it's not raining. You have to see that the proper yajna is there so that there's rain. Then everything will go nicely. So that means if we set up a temple in Timbuktu, then it would start to become green. There isn't one, so it's not. Right. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued. In the sacrifice arranged by Maharaj Ambarish, the members of the assembly and the priests, especially Hota Udgata Brahma and Advaryu, were gorgeously dressed, and they all looked exactly like demigods. They eagerly saw to the proper performance of the yajna. Footnote 10. In his purport to verse 23, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, one cannot say that the devatasare unique because their eyes do not blink. At these sacrifices, the assembly stood with unblinking eyes, also as seeing the extraordinary sacrifices. Right? So it was so wonderful. People were just staring and not blinking. So then, in this way, everyone's elevated to the devotional, the demigod platform. So it's not that, oh, we don't care for all these things, we're just devotees, so we don't do it. No, all these things are inspiring. That's why we do things on a big scale, because then it's inspiring. But as Ambarish Maharaj is there, he's seeing that it's going in proper devotional consciousness for the proper purpose, under the advice of these others. Right, so that whole combination, then it works very nicely. Right? Otherwise, then, we talk about big, but at the same time, things that can make things big, we make them small. But what inspires devotees is festivals, prasad, all these kirtans and that. But if those are reduced, because of being practical in management, and at the same time, how can we make things big and make us and become recognized, then how does that go out? That's like saying building the fire and throwing water on it at the same time. You know, it doesn't make sense. So here is that they do something so great and that attracts everybody, therefore it's amazing. But it's within the context of himself. He's not going beyond his means. The citizens of the state of Marj Ambarish were accustomed to chanting and hearing about the glorious activities of the Personality Godhead. Thus they never aspired to be elevated to the heavenly planets, which are extremely dear even to the demigods. Those who are saturated with the transcendental happiness of rendering service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead are uninterested even in the achievements of great mystics, for such achievements do not enhance the transcendental bliss felt by a devotee who always thinks of Krishna within the core of his heart. Srila Prabhupada comments, a pure devotee is uninterested not only in elevation of the higher planetary systems, but even in the perfections of mystic yoga. Real perfection is devotional service. The happiness derived from merging in the impersonal Brahman and the happiness derived from the eight perfections of mystic yoga, anima, lagima, prapti, and so on, do not give any pleasure to the devotee. Right? Because that's only something if they're going to use it. It's just used. It's just like you use a pot. It's not that the pot is giving you unlimited bliss. You know, all I want in life is just a pot. Right? You know, and then I have this nice pot and then I can cook. You know, like, no. Point is it's engaged in Krishna's service. So they're not interested in them. And so therefore we see great personalities. They have these. But very rarely you ever see them use them because, you know, the point is to be Krishna conscious, remember Krishna. And that's the whole point. So doing something big is for engaging people. It's not that doing something big, that's the devotional service. You have the ability to do something big, you do something big because that's what you do. Right? Does that make sense? You know, probably mentioned if the, you know, Americans, Europeans don't put together a big temple here and do something, you know, big, then what's the point of their always talking big, right? They always like to present themselves, yes, we are the greatest, like that.
You said, what's the point of being an American?
Yeah, that's the whole point. Yeah, so therefore, then it's about engaging the nature. So... as stated by Srila Prabodhananda Saraswati, when a devotee has achieved the position of rendering transcendental loving service to the Lord through the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, he thinks the impersonal Brahman to be no better than hell, and he regards material happiness in the heavenly planets to be like a will-o'-the-wisp. As far as the perfection of mystic power is concerned, a devotee compares it to a venomous snake with no teeth. Doesn't have any effect. There's no importance to it. Because everybody, oh, I'd love to have... No, they don't care. A mystic yogi is especially concerned with controlling the senses. But because the senses of the devotee are engaged in the service of the Lord, Rishikena, Rishikesha, Shravanam, Bhaktir, Uchite, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, 19.170, there is no need for separate control of the senses. For those who are materially engaged, control of the senses is required. But a devotee's senses are all engaged in the service of the Lord, which means they are already controlled. Param drishtvani vartate, Bhagavad Gita 2.59. A devotee's senses are not attracted by material enjoyment. And even though the material world is full of misery, the devotee considers this material world to be also spiritual because everything is engaged in the service of the Lord. The difference between the spiritual world and the material world is the mentality of service. Nirbandha Krishna Sambandhe Yuktam Vairagyam Uchate. When there is no mentality of service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one's activities are material. So that defines the difference. So it's not actually by location. It's actually by mentality. So all those with that mentality are within the spiritual world, and those without it are here. But the point is you can here be in the spiritual world because you're within Krishna's energy and you're seeing it all connected to the Lord, so its effect is spiritual. Does that make sense? And so great personalities can come here from there, and one can be there and have developed that material mentality and come here. So it's not actually location. It's mentality. That which is not engaged in the service of the Lord is material, and nothing thus engaged should be given up. So if it's not engaged in Krishna's service, it's material. And if it is engaged in Krishna's service, it shouldn't be given up. Right? So that's the whole point, is that if things are going favorably in that way, then it goes. If there's some obstacle there in engaging in Krishna's service, then one might try it other avenues. That makes sense? That's Yukta Vairagya. In the construction of a high skyscraper and the construction of the temple, there may be the same enthusiasm, but the endeavors are different, for one is material and the other spiritual. Spiritual activities should not be confused with material activities and given up. Nothing connected with Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is material. A devotee who considers all this is always situated in spiritual activities. And therefore he is no longer attracted by material activities. Param Drishvani Vartante, Bhagavad Gita 2:59. So what he's not attracted to is the idea of not doing things connected to Krishna. We look at it, engaging the senses and all that, I should consider Krishna. Right? Or I'm not considering Krishna. But it's actually, they're starting from the other side. They don't see anything to not be connected to Krishna. So there's no interest to not see things not connected to Krishna. Right? They always want to see things connected to Krishna. That's spiritual vision. Right? Material vision is, it's not connected to Krishna. And then when we're spiritualizing, we're taking what we're not connecting to Krishna and connecting it to Krishna. That makes sense? So when the consciousness is good, we do that, it's spiritual and moves forward. When the consciousness is not good, we stop doing that. It stops moving forward. Right? That's the difference between the direct and indirect. Because the indirect, your consciousness is right, it moves forward. Your consciousness is not, it doesn't. So that's what we're trying to do, is make that distinction. So when we're trying to do everything to please Krishna, that means we're not seeing any opportunities for sense gratification, because we're only seeing opportunities for service. Right? You have a situation, somebody sees that they can relax there. Someone sees they can make money off of this. Right? Someone sees that they could gain knowledge from this. Right? Like that, or influence. But devotees see how they could render service. So it's a different mentality. So if you see things in connection with service, there is no sense gratification. Because sense gratification means it's not connected to Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, "The king of this planet, Maharaj Ambarish, thus performed devotional service to the Lord, and in this endeavor practiced severe austerity, always satisfying the Supreme Personality of Godhead by his constitutional activities. He gradually gave up all material desires." Srila Prabhupada comments, "Severe austerities in the practice of devotional service are of many varieties. For example, in worshipping the deity in the temple, there are certainly laborious activities. Sri Vigrahara Dhana Nityanana Shringara Tan Mandira Marjanado. One must decorate the deity, cleanse the temple, bring water from the Ganges and Jamuna, continue the routine work, perform artik many times, prepare first-class food for the deity, prepare dresses and so on. In this way, one must be constantly engaged in various activities, and the hard labor involved is certainly an austerity. Similarly, the hard labor involved in preaching, preparing literature, preaching to atheistic men, and distributing literature door to door is, of course, an austerity. Tapo yuktena. Tapo divyam putraka. Srimad Bhagavatam 551. Such austerity is necessary. Yena sattvam shudyet. By such austerity and devotional service, one is purified by material existence. Kaman shaner janau. Indeed, such austerity leads one to the constitutional position of devotional service. In this way, one can give up material desires. And as soon as one is freed from material desires, he is freed from the repetition of birth and death, old age and disease." Right? So one is freed from material desires because you replace that with spiritual austerity engaged in spiritual service. Right? Because the mind wants to do something for sense gratification. So we control the mind, engage it in something that's not for sense gratification, but for the satisfaction of the Lord. Right? So that then, that's how the one cuts the other. Right? And then if you increase material desire, we generally decrease our interest in spiritual activities. Right? So it's one thing. So austerity means technically the mind. Engaging the mind how it should be engaged, that's the austerity. So because if you do that, you perform your duties. We say austerity is performing the duties, but to do the duty, the mind has to accept it. So the austerity is the mind's acceptance of it and sticking to that. How will that be controlled? By the intelligence. How is that controlled? By the consciousness. So we're Krishna conscious, then we use our intelligence, buddhi yoga, to connect everything to the Lord so the mind is then properly engaged.
But austerity is engaging the mind, but all the activities are of the senses. So
yes.
It's actually active Krishna consciousness.
Yes.
Austerity.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. It's after, because it's performance of duties. Mm-hmm. So that means the body, mind, and words are all engaged. So the point being is that, but to do that, the mind has to accept it. So when the mind accepts it, then it's giving up the material desires. So as we become purified, we accept more doing it connected to Krishna and less sense gratification. So as we go, then it's a progress. Does that make sense? Yeah. A little louder, please.
Austerity as a overcoming difficulty and obstacle.
Yes, you're overcoming difficulty. But those difficulties, yeah, yes, you're overcoming the difficulties because the point is the mind doesn't like difficulties. It only likes enjoying itself. But it doesn't mind difficulties if it's going to enjoy itself. If I say, you know, how you say, you know, you, how you say, you, in the storm, you get across the river by holding on to a dead body and to climb up into the window, you know, where the girl is, then you use a snake. So you don't mind as long as you get the girl. Right, but the point is then, if it was you have to do all that to please Krishna, and when you get up there, then you can offer Artik, you might not get so enthused. Yes. Okay. Yeah. So that's the point, is that the austerity is getting the mind to just do what it's supposed to do, and then the mind will engage the senses, which engage the body. Right. So, if you change the consciousness, then you change the desire from sense gratification to pleasing Krishna. So that's the crux of what we're trying to do, is just get the mind to accept the you know, seemingly the other side. We're technically, we're on the other side. We're trying to get back to the natural position. So, so that means in the spiritual world, when they come down to preach, when they mention to their friend, I'll see you back on this side. Yes.
Generally, when we say that a person has a weak heart, that means his intelligence or consciousness is weak.
Yes.
Weakness of heart.
Yeah, that's weakness of heart, yes. That's Hridaya Darvalya. So it just means that the opportunities for the concept that I'm the controller and enjoyer, and then the specifics of how we want to control and enjoy, that's weakness of heart. Right? So giving up weakness of heart means that we identify ourselves as servant of Krishna. So then, being servant of Krishna, therefore, we will engage the secondary in Krishna's service. So you change the primary, you change the secondary. If someone's not aware of the primary, you engage them in Krishna conscious secondary activities, and from that they'll come to the primary. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Maharaj, so when we perform service, there are many desires arise, I mean on different levels.
Yes.
So how can we ascertain that we are motivated by spiritual desire?
Means analyze, why are you doing it? Means it's just like this. someone standing next to the pot of rice, and the pot of rice needs to be checked if it's cooked or not. So who should check it? Who is it easier to check? Right, the person next to the pot. So is anyone closer to your desires than you? No. So then you should be the one checking. I mean, Super Soul's there, he's checking. And everybody else around you is checking, but you should be checking.
But like people are easily, you know, cheat themselves, you know.
But then do you want Krishna conscious or do you want to be cheated? So you put yourself, that's why Rupa Goswami says, associate with those who are more advanced. Because then, if they're more advanced than you, means spiritually, then you're going to see where the weakness is that you're not coming up to, or you're not, means where you could do more. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the whole idea.
The problem is, I mean, we're in illusion, how can we check ourselves?
But the point is the soul is transcendental. So using transcendental intelligence, we can look at things. Now, if we don't want to do that, that's another thing. If we want to go on the illusion that I'm a great and fabulous devotee, then yeah, don't do that. But if you want to actually please Krishna, then you pray for the intelligence to be able to do that. Because it's by Krishna's grace we can do that. Because self-realization means it's by Krishna's grace. We're not going to do it on our own. So if we want it, Krishna will give it. We don't want it, he won't give it. Yeah. And we should be able to look at what we're doing and why we're doing it. Right. And then according to Shastra, then apply that on it rather than we're always that unique exception, you know, on everything. But when it comes to rules, of course, we're just the standard. Is that make sense? Okay. Did we finish this?
No.
Or on indeed or? Oh, okay. Such austerity is necessary. Yena sattvam shudyet. By such austerity and devotional service, one is purified of material existence. Kaman shaner janao. Indeed, such austerity leads one to the constitutional position of devotional service. In this way, one can give up material desires, and as soon as one is freed from material desires, he is freed from the repetition of birth and death, old age, and disease. Right? Because these go with material. Material means not connected to Krishna, so Krishna... you know, the manifestation of Bhagavan is eternal, you know, full of bliss. So we end up with temporary and not full of bliss. You know, so that's the whole point. So when we get rid of material desires, then we can actually function on the spiritual. Because you actually have to see it spiritually to actually be able to accept that you can be happy. Right? That people can be nice. People can be good. Like that. Yes. A little bit louder, please.
So going back to your earlier point about the mind, how do you understand associating with like-minded devotees? How do you understand that statement?
Like means they're using, one is the similarity in desire for Krishna consciousness, and the other is that then have a similar either set of values that they engage in Krishna's service or a similar values of how to engage in Krishna's service. You know what I'm saying? So depending upon the what is one's nature. Does that make sense? So if it's more specific or more eclectic, you know, so then. So the main thing is the Krishna conscious standard and then the mediums you use in Krishna consciousness. So those two together. But of the two, same Krishna conscious mentality. That's more important. So you can have devotees that are maybe very different by how they engage in service, but they can get on very well because of the commonality of pure devotion. And at the same time is then you have those that use similar areas of engagement, so then they can relate and converse based on that. Some sense, yes.
So it can be on the primary or the secondary.
Yeah, primary, right, or secondary. But the primary always has to be there. Now it's just a matter of whether secondary is there or not. So the primary will always be there. Because if you drop it down to just the primary, then you're also dropping that, I mean, down to the secondary, you're dropping the stand, your level of primary. Right? So if you focus more on that secondary, it just means your understanding of the primary is not as strong. So that means then you would associate with others who are like in that mentality. Like that. But trying to be those who are more advanced means going towards Krishna, not away. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, Maharaj Ambarish gave up all attachment to household affairs, wives, children, friends, and relatives, to the best of powerful elements. Elephants, okay. Oh, attachment too, okay, the best of powerful elephants. To beautiful chariots, carts, horses, and inexhaustible jewels, and to ornaments, garments, and an inexhaustible treasury. Okay, so he had attachment four because he had that. I think Prabhupada was talking with some devotees. I think in a room conversation he was talking about, has anybody ever seen the piles of jewels? It's very different than, you know, you get the little thing and, you know, you get the big safe, monster safe, they, you know, this, open the safe, then they get out a box, and then the box they look to, and then they get a piece of paper, and then they open the paper, and in that, holding the paper very carefully, you can see a jewel there. You know, we're talking about just piled on the ground jewels. So it's probably, it's talking, you know, that's what he says here, that's what he says, inexhaustible jewels, just unlimited piles of jewels. You know, he gave up attachment to all of them, regarding them as temporary and material. So they're temporary, so they don't have, and they won't give any spiritual happiness. So that's the material. Now you engage them in Krishna's service, it's devotional service, but it's not them that makes you happy. That's the whole point. He gave up the attachment that these things will make him happy. It doesn't mean he can't engage them in Krishna's service. It's two different things. Right? We're attached to something because we think it'll make us happy, and we connect that to Krishna. Here, he knows these won't make us happy, but as a king, these are the things he engages in Krishna's service. So as a king, he does that. If he wasn't a king, he's out in the forest as a vanaprastha, then he wouldn't be using any of them. But it's not that he goes out on vanaprastha and leaves and all that, but takes his favorite, you know, most powerful elephant with him, you know, like that. No, he goes out with nothing. So then whatever's in the forest, he engages now that in Krishna's service. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Srila Prabhupada comments. In preaching, many things considered material are needed. A devotee should not have any attachment for such material involvements as house, wife, children, friends, and cars. It's funny how in Ambarish then everything's in plural, and then when you get to here, everything's more in singular. You know?
Cars.
Yeah.
Wife and house only.
Huh? Sorry?
Only wife and house is one.
Yes, but still it's that.
Nowadays there's car for the wife, a car for the husband.
Yes, like that. There's no before it was, you had elephants, chariots, carts, horses, you know, so here we only have cars, so he had those and more.
No mention of piles of jewels.
No piles of jewels. No, no, it's not mentioned. It's strange, isn't it? Maharaj Ambarish, for example, had all such things, but he was not attached to them. This is the effect of bhakti yoga. Bhakti, pareshanu bhavo, vakritir, anyatra cha, Srimad Bhagavatam 11.2.42. One who is advanced in devotional service has no attachment for material things for sense gratification, but for preaching, to spread the glories of the Lord, he accepts such things without attachment. That's the whole point, is for the service to the Lord, they're used. But for sense gratification, there's not. So that's what we mean. There's no attachment means there's no desire for sense gratification. It doesn't mean they're not engaged. right? But generally we think we only engage something because we're attached to it. But here it's no, it's because it's that is what can be engaged in Krishna's service according to your position. So things that can be accepted like that and used for Krishna are used. But if they're not for Krishna, they're not used. Right? Like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in Calcutta. Right? There's places around. For preaching, they had cars. Right? And they just... there's a picture. You've seen the picture of him at Radhakund getting out of the car and all that. That's a Jaguar. Right? That's not just... It's not an ambassador. Right? So... they had cars like that. In other words, what's the best car? He had those because then people are impressed. You get out of that car, oh, this. What does this man have to say? Right? But for preaching, they were used. But if they weren't preaching, they didn't use the cars. They just sat there. They said, oh, but it's just sitting there. No, let it sit. Let it sit there. Walk. Right? You know, use the local, you know, whatever it is. Because they're there. Everything's around there. You can walk to everything in Calcutta. Anything you need. So therefore you just walk. You don't take the car because it's prestigious. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the point, is that everything is used, so there's no attachment. So therefore, for preaching it's used, but if it's not for preaching, then they just live their simple lifestyle. That's the idea. So, yeah. Anashaktasya vishayan yatartham upayunjata. Everything can be used to the extent that it can be engaged in Krishna's service. So anything can be engaged, anything can be used if it can be engaged in Krishna's service. Can't be engaged in Krishna's service, then it's left. So you can say, oh, we can engage anything, as long as you can engage in Krishna's service. That's the whole point. So that's why then one has to have the proper understanding of knowledge, culture, the process of devotion, so you know how to engage things. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, being very pleased by the unalloyed of... Oh, well, time's up.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki.
Jai.
Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.